Happy Friday, everybody. Welcome to the Michael Cutler Hour. I am your host, Michael Cutler, December the 5th, 2014. My gosh, the time absolutely is running on steroids. It's going so quickly, so much going on, so much crazy stuff going on. Thank you so much for joining me. It's always great to play that famous game of catch-up with you at the end of the week, and what a week it has been. For those of you who are familiar with me, you know that I'm a retired senior special agent with the former Immigration and Naturalization Service, an agency that was all-encompassing way back when and was then sliced and diced when they created what I have come to refer to as the Department of Homeland Surrender. ICE took over the mission of the interior enforcement of our immigration laws, which, quite frankly, is all but non-existent with this current administration. And in fact, as an aside, you may or may not know, there is a division of ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, that has been a spinoff known as Homeland Security Investigations. And it's apparent that the reason for doing this is to get the word immigration out of enforcement altogether. So we've got a serious problem because, as I always like to point out, immigration is not a single issue but a singular issue because it impacts just about every challenge, just about every threat that America and Americans face today. Those of you, again, who are familiar with me know about my websites, but for those of you who are new, thank you for coming on board this evening. My own personal website, Michael Cutler, C-U-T-L-E-R, michaelcutler.net. Also, for quite a few years now, I have been a senior fellow with a terrific organization based in beautiful downtown Santa Barbara, California, and as winter closes in, that climate out west is ever more tempting, and of course, that's Californians for Population Stabilization, and their terrific website, capsweb.org, C-A-P-S, capsweb.org. I am one of many writers who contribute our perspectives, our experience, expertise, if you will, on a wide variety of issues. And my particular area, as would be expected, is the impact of failures to secure our borders and enforce our immigration laws on the quality of life, congestion, security, public safety, public health, but not just for California, because if you look at what they have on their website, what is happening to California, quite frankly, is happening clear across the country. So, again, although the title of the organization is Californians for Population Stabilization, it's a website that I strongly urge everybody to visit, read the commentaries, read the alerts, pay attention to what they're talking about, because they are truly leading the charge out on the West Coast and across America to try to educate our fellow Americans, because getting the information out there today, gosh, it's an uphill battle. So anyway, capsweb.org. Also, I'm proud to be a columnist for another terrific organization, the David Horowitz Freedom Center. Their online magazine, Front Page Magazine, is one that I'm very happy to write for. In fact, I was with David Horowitz and the wonderful folks from the Freedom Center at the Breakers Hotel just 2 weeks ago in beautiful, West Palm Beach, Florida. Another great place to be as winter closed in. In fact, I remember thinking as I was waiting online to get on board the airliner to go home that Sunday night that the temperature in Florida was 81 degrees. But in New York, it was dipping down to close to freezing, and I was questioning my sanity for getting on the airplane to leave that beautiful place and that amazing meeting where I was privileged, really, to be on a panel with one of my true heroes in the U.S. Senate, Senator Jeff Sessions from Alabama, a staunch supporter of effective immigration law enforcement, effective border controls, really looking out for American families and American workers. What a novel thought with this wacky crew in Washington. Additionally, Congressman Louie Gohmert, Congressman John Fleming, also on that panel, had a wonderful conversation with both of those representatives. And I know that Louis Gohmert from Texas is trying his best to do what's right. But boy, oh boy, there's a hell of a bunch of knuckleheads in both political parties who are really hammering us. It's absolutely remarkable. But again, Front Page Magazine, another great place to go for information. They are involved with a broader spectrum of issues, but I urge you to go to Front Page Magazine. I'm also involved with another group, The Social Contract. My recent article was just published in that quarterly online magazine, and they also put out a hard copy. The Social Contract, another great place. And finally, not least, Progressives for Immigration Reform. I wrote a policy brief for them just a couple of months ago that I entitled The Liberal Case for Effective Immigration Law Enforcement. And here's what's so remarkable, and here's what I want you all to think about. Really important. David Horowitz Freedom Center is a conservative organization. Progressives for Immigration Reform, as the name implies, are progressives. They're very liberal. Think about it. I don't change my perspectives when I write an article for Progressives for Immigration Reform as compared with when I write something for CAPS or The Social Contract or Front Page Magazine. My message is my message is my message. And unlike the open borders anarchists, immigration anarchists, I don't change the language because the language of the law works just fine. This isn't about propaganda, at least not for me, and not for the organizations I write for. I'm very pleased that they invited me to work with them. I'm very pleased that nobody from any of those organizations would ever say to me, gee whiz, Mike, you know, you've gone a little too far here. You can't say that. No, I'm encouraged by all of those organizations to call them as I see them. And I got to tell you, that's a novelty in this day and age where the news has become so convoluted and twisted and biased. We don't need government censorship. We have enough censorship in the private sector, folks, and it is devastating. And if you look at the way that lessons are being taught in schools across the country, that's devastating. And by the way, I'm not even a conservative. I'm a lifelong registered Democrat. I consider myself a centrist. On some issues, I'm a little bit further to the left. On other issues, I'm a little bit further to the right. But essentially, I'm down the middle. These are American issues. American issues. And if we destroy our security, the world will suffer. America has been the 911 for the world. When there is a crisis, when there's a tsunami, when there's revolution, the Ebola outbreak, whatever. Guess who shows up? The United States of America. The world has come to depend on us being there. And we have people in this country today on both sides of the political aisle who I've come to call the deconstructionalists. Deconstructionalists. They are deconstructing our middle class and with it the heart and soul of America. Because what makes America so unique, or at least what used to make America so unique, was our huge, vibrant, upwardly mobile middle class. That, as the saying goes, anyone could grow up to be president of the United States. Remarkable. And if you watch what's happening, and if you watch the talking heads on TV, and it leaves me screaming sometimes, I got to tell you, they sit there and scratch their heads, these folks who sit on the altar of the television studio, pontificating, acting so self-important and so smug and so knowledgeable, scratching their heads and trying to figure out what's between their ears. They talk about, well, they've created all these jobs, but unemployment remains at 5.8%, and on Black Friday this year, sales were down as compared with last year. What could be happening? And I'll tell you what could be happening. What's happening is that we keep on bringing in more workers generally than the number of new jobs being created. This month they created over 300,000 jobs. Maybe we kind of broke even this time. I don't know what the salary levels were, but look at the nonsense that we're being spoon-fed by the media, by the administration, and you really have to keep on reminding yourself. Unemployment is at 5.8%. Don't break out the champagne. There's nothing to celebrate, nothing to see here, folks, because they're ignoring the plight of tens of millions of unemployed Americans and underemployed Americans. They're ignoring the fact that it's now estimated that 1 in 4 children live below the poverty line in these United States of America. They're ignoring the fact that politicians from both sides of the aisle are out there talking about how we have to bring in the world's best and brightest so America can lead. Think about what that statement says. We have to import the best and brightest. Are we too stupid in America? I mean, maybe we are when you look at the cement heads that we elect to office. But when we went to the moon over 40 years ago, we didn't run around the world saying, please help us, we're too stupid. When America built the Panama Canal, no one said, gee, those lazy Americans will never get the job done. You know, we have always been the country that was known for the can-do spirit. Can-do. You don't even hear those words anymore. Today we're being beaten into the ground by the people that we elect to represent us. They tell us how stupid we are. They tell us how lazy we are. They tell us how non-productive we are. Really? They're describing Congress, but they're not describing the average working American. You know, my dad will always be my biggest hero. He was a construction worker, a tradesman, a plumber on construction sites. He went to work, whether it was swelteringly hot, whether it was bitterly cold, not just him, all of his buddies, the carpenters, the bricklayers, the electricians, the roofers, the iron workers, and, of course, the plumbers and so forth. These guys are out there 24/7. You tell them that there's a job to be done. If they have to work overtime, they don't complain. If they have to go out there in miserable weather, they don't complain. If the job is dangerous and filthy and backbreaking, it's called another day at work. Another day at work. And nobody gets wealthy doing the jobs they do. And the dangers that they're subjected to in the construction trades are more dangerous than law enforcement. This is a dangerous, backbreaking, filthy job, and they do it. And there's no shortage of American workers to do the jobs. The only thing exceptional about foreign workers is that they are willing to work for exceptionally low wages. But, of course, that gets left out of the equation because you have people that we've given this holy title to, the philanthropists, Bill Gates and Zuckerberg. Yeah. Some philanthropists, they would tell you that the best way to feed a hungry mice is to put cheese on a mousetrap. That's the kind of philanthropists that they are. Zuckerberg created a program called the Hackathon. The Hackathon, where Zuckerberg and some of his buddies from Silicon Valley, you know, these folks that are living in poverty, they're only worth a few billion dollars, or maybe tens of billions, were actually tutoring young people to teach them how to write computer code. What an amazing opportunity. What an amazing opportunity. My late wife, first wife, may she rest in peace, died decades ago, but she was a systems programmer, great profession programming. It's a job that really needs to be done. You need great intellect and great ability, and it's an opportunity to really make a decent living. So instead of saying, well, let's see if we can help American kids who are living in poverty to bootstrap themselves out of poverty, you know, we hear about this $15 an hour minimum wage. Really, do you think anyone is going to get out of poverty on $15 an hour? And, I mean, we've got to understand what we're talking about. It's 30-something thousand a year, 32,000 a year. We're told the poverty line is 27 or 28,000 a year. Where? In what third world country? Try to live in New York City on $28,000 a year. Try living on triple that money in New York City today. Lots of luck. So, you know, they were going to have this big push. We're going to teach people how to write computer code, and boy, isn't that dandy. But you know what the prerequisite was? Believe it or not, not only did you have to be a foreign person, but you had to be here illegally. Illegally. And if you look at the immigration laws, and I'm not going to turn this into a law lesson, I know I often say that, but Title 8, United States Code, Section 1324, the smuggling statutes, deems it a felony to aid, abet, encourage, induce, harbor, shield, or transport illegal aliens in flagrant violation of law. if you know that their being here is a violation. Sounds like the hackathon for illegal aliens hits the jackpot on the money. And yet, what did the Obama administration do? Nothing. They were ecstatic. Screw over the American workers, screw over American children, screw over American kids living in poverty, but we're told about the need to be compassionate, provided you're compassionate with people from some other country, but the hell with Americans. The hell with Americans. We are the expendables. We are the disposable ones. Why should we take care of our own? Let's take care of the rest of the world, and the hell with Americans. That's exactly the message we are getting from both political parties. That's precisely the message. I've done some radio shows this week, and I thought of something while I was on one of the programs. And I said, you know, they do this exit polling when people leave the voting booth. And they say to them, who'd you vote for? Who did you vote for? And then they plot the numbers and try to project who's winning. I have a better question. Maybe those pollsters ought to be asking, who did you vote against? Because with a couple of exceptions, the Jeff Sessions, my friend Lou Barletta, the congressman from Hazleton, Pennsylvania, Congressman Steve King. We can go down a list. I don't want to start naming them all because if I leave somebody out, then people will infer that I don't like somebody. But really, the bulk of those people in Washington, they got in not because they're loved or great and wonderful, but because they were running against some even worse garbage. I mean, this is what we're getting for government. Do you wonder why the approval rate for Congress is in the toilet? What kind of leadership do we have when you have people like John Boehner, who's out there saying, oh, the president is undermining the Constitution, he's playing with fire. We want to do something with all these illegal aliens, but the president is poisoning the well. Poisoning the well. Why on earth would you want to provide unknown millions of illegal aliens, not only with lawful status, but why would you want to provide them with official identity documents when you know darn well there's no capacity to do a face-to-face interview, you know darn well there's no capacity to do a real field investigation, and never mind that nonsense that Jay Johnson, the head of the Department of Homeland Surrender, spouts and spews every time he gets in front of the microphones or a congressional hearing. Oh, we're going to do background checks on these people. Let me dispel a myth for all of you. This is really important. Take notes, because I want you to call your congressmen. I want you to call your senators. I want you to call the idiot mayors and governors of the towns and cities and states where you live if they proclaim themselves to be sanctuaries, a place of safety for whom? Terrorists, criminals, fugitives from justice from third world countries? I mean, what in the world are we doing? Our immigration laws and our borders are our first and last line of defense against international terrorists and transnational criminals. Common sense. Now, they talk about doing a background check. Here's what it really means. You won't believe it, or maybe you will. They're going to run the name that the person puts in an application. Now, remember, folks, they are undocumented. Undocumented means they don't have an official identity document from any country in the world to attest to who they are. Many of them will just come in and say, my name is Joe Smith. And they will provide you with some nonsense, you know, statement from a friend of theirs who's also lying about their own identity. They're going to claim when they got here, and meanwhile they're going to be probably proffering counterfeit rent receipts and utility bills. How do I know? Because as an agent back during the 86 amnesty, that's exactly what went on. And by the way, something you might not know about the 86 amnesty that President Reagan gave us, and this is why I get nuts when I have people saying, oh, this party is good or that party is good, both parties suck. There was a provision in the amnesty of 86 of confidentiality, so that I had occasions when I would have an FBI agent come to me or a New York City police homicide detective come to me and say, I need to have information contained in an amnesty file, the 86 amnesty, because we know this guy's likely to kill somebody. And I could have had that file sitting in my file drawer, but if I handed it to that officer from the New York City Police Department or if I handed it to that FBI agent, I could have lost my job. I could have been prosecuted, because part of what we had in that amnesty of 86 was a confidentiality clause. You could not share that information with anybody else in law enforcement. Now think about it. if you were a naturalized citizen and the FBI came and said, I need the file on Joe Smith, if I didn't turn the file over, they could have locked me up and said, hey, you're obstructing justice. We need that file. Same thing with the NYPD. You'd be in all kinds of trouble. But if you were an illegal alien, you were protected. You were protected. So this is how we do business in this insane country, where we give greater protection to people who violate our borders and violate our laws than the people who play by the rules and do what the law requires. This is sheer freaking lunacy. I don't know how to say it stronger. So they're going to take the name that the person provides on the application as though this is the gospel truth. We won't be certain of the person's name or date of birth or maybe even that person's country of citizenship, but we'll take them at their word because who could possibly lie to us, right? What motivation would they have? And then they're going to run the fingerprints. And there's no magic to fingerprint, folks. You know, most people have this notion that, boom, you run the fingerprints and the computer starts spewing out reams of paper and photographs and God knows what else. If we're dealing with someone from another country who has never been processed, fingerprinted inside the United States, not been fingerprinted in countries that are close allies of ours, the likelihood is very great that those fingerprints will come back no record, no hit. So if a person files an application and they use a bogus name that comes back no hit, their fingerprints aren't known to us because they intentionally have been flying below the radar because they're terrorists or they're ringleaders of major criminal organizations in some third world country or they're fugitives. There's a good chance, not 100%, but a good chance the prints are going to come back no hit. Within 48 hours or whatever time limit this incredible Department of Homeland Surrender is going to establish, they will issue to that illegal alien an official identity document. And, I mean, think about it. Everybody knows, including the aliens, that there's no capacity for anyone to go out and knock on any doors and ask any questions or figure out who the person really is or what the person is really about. The opportunity for fraud in that kind of a terrible situation is astonishing. It violates common sense. It violates the 9/11 Commission report and findings and recommendations. But this is what passes for business as usual today. It's absolutely astonishing. And if you look at the way our government screws up time and time and time again, this is a real concern. They just, when I say they, Al-Qaeda just took another American hostage in the Middle East, a young, attractive young lady, American school teacher. What she looked like or didn't look like is irrelevant, but as it turned out, she at least certainly looked like a very sweet young woman who was teaching public school, teaching children in the Middle East, was murdered. Concern being that people in the Middle East are being targeted when it's known that they're Americans. We live in a dangerous world. We know that ISIS has consistently been threatening to come to the United States and chop off people's heads. I mean, understand the risk that we're facing. There are people who want to come here and do us in. And that's why border security is supposed to be a big issue. I know I've read this before, but I feel compelled to read this to you again. You know, I provided testimony to the 9/11 Commission. And you would think, after 9/11, you would think after terrorists have been arrested throughout the last dozen years or so since 9/11, that we know that they're still making efforts to come here, they, the terrorists. After the Boston Marathon bombing, after the statements made by that thug with the knife who has chopped off people's heads saying, we're coming to America, that we would get the idea that we need to secure our borders, not just the Mexican border, by the way, but all means of entering our country. We are indeed a country of 50 border states. So we're being told the borders are secure. Don't worry about anything. Everything is under control. Bunk. That's the technical term for it. So the 9/11 Commission had a staff. And the 9/11 Commission staff was comprised of attorneys and federal agents, immigration agents, FBI agents, and so forth. And the staff looked at the situation and what was written by the 9/11 Commission. And they said, you know, with as much attention as the 9/11 Commission paid to immigration and the way that the terrorists were able to get identity documents and move freely, we need to publish our own separate report. So they put out a report that's nearly 300 pages in length. It's known as the 9/11 Commission Staff Report on Terrorist Travel. Very clear name. You know what it's about. Here is how the preface of that report begins. These are the first words after you get past the index. Perhaps obvious to state that terrorists cannot plan and carry out attacks in the United States if they are unable to enter the country. Yet prior to September 11, while there were efforts to enhance border security, no agency of the U.S. government thought of border security as a tool in the counterterrorism arsenal. Indeed, even after 19 hijackers demonstrated the relative ease of obtaining a U.S. visa and gaining admission into the United States, border security still is not considered a cornerstone of national security policy. We believe, for reasons that we discuss in the following pages, that it must be made one. Right off the bat. And again, if I'm being repetitious, if you heard this before, bear with me, because I want to make certain that everyone gets it, that it sinks in. It sinks in, that we all understand how dangerous Obama's proposal to give what is being claimed to be 4 to 5 million illegal aliens who snuck into the country, who are undocumented, lawful status, identity documents. This is crazy. This is an act of national suicide. I don't know how to make the point more strongly. This is on page 47 of that same report. Once terrorists had entered the United States, their next challenge was to find a way to remain here. Their primary method was immigration fraud. For example, Yusuf and Ajaj concocted bogus political asylum stories when they arrived in the United States. Mahmoud Abu Alima, involved in both the World Trade Center and landmark plots, received temporary residence under the Seasonal Agricultural Worker Program after falsely claiming he picked beans in Florida. You know, it's so remarkable, because that component to the 86 amnesty, the seasonal, or perhaps it's also known as the Special Agriculture Program, Workers Program, or SAW, S-A-W, was Chuck Schumer's baby. Chuck Schumer recently, within the last month, went out there and did a news conference ranting and raving. I mean, could you imagine Chuck Schumer standing in front of a television camera? Hard to imagine. So there's Schumer in front of the microphones, in front of the cameras, basking in the glow of the floodlights. And what does Schumer say? You know, we've got a problem with people trespassing on New York City landmarks. We had a couple of German tourists who climbed the cables and took down the American flag and put up a whitewashed flag. We had some other, I think a Russian tourist do something similar, climb the cables with his camera so that he could take pictures from some odd angle. And they dispatched a police helicopter to force him down. And then we had someone else trespass on the Manhattan Bridge and hang up a Palestinian flag. And we had some guys climb the tower of the Trade Center and do what's known as a base jump. You know, they had parachutes. They jumped off the roof, that being the base, and fortunately didn't hurt themselves or anybody when they landed on the street way down below. And Schumer said, you know, this is dangerous. Maybe they didn't mean any harm, but you never know when people trespass on these critical facilities. And the reason people trespass, Schumer said, is because there's not enough of a punishment to people that get caught. The worst you get in New York is a year in jail. Usually it's no more than 3 months in jail. So nobody is deterred from doing this. And he said, you want to stop people from trespassing? Make this a 5-year felony. Put trespassers in jail for 5 years, they'll stop doing it. Holy smoke. Chuck Schumer, the guy who brought us the agricultural amnesty provision of 86 Immigration Reform and Control Act. And by the way, at the time, Chuck was my congressman, never my representative, had no farms in his district. No farm. He wasn't bringing home the bacon, as the saying goes, for anybody here in New York. I have no idea why in the world he was fixated on it, except for the fact that it was about a political agenda. So here's Schumer, the guy that wanted to provide opportunities for agricultural workers, the guy that jumps up and down about how we have to go after trespassers by cranking down on them, by beefing up penalties and putting people in jail for years. you trespass on that bridge, we're going to put you in jail for 5 years. I mean, you want to talk about sending a strong message? Chuck is your man. We're going to nail you to the wall. But on the other hand, if you happen to trespass on the United States of America, a different Chuck Schumer emerges. Oh, these folks have earned a pathway to U.S. citizenship, he will tell you. The disconnect, the lack of mouth-ear coordination is astonishing. It's astonishing, and it's deadly. But where is John Boehner? John Boehner is out there, and what is he saying? Oh, we want to work with the president, but he's poisoning the well by acting unilaterally. He's undermining the Constitution. Well, I think he's right. He is undermining the Constitution. But how come not a word from the Republican Party about how what Obama is proposing will undermine national security and public safety or the dreams of Americans? To suddenly dump 5 million workers into the labor pool. And I know the argument, oh, they're working already. Nonsense. Some of them are, and if they are, the reason they got jobs as illegal aliens is so that they can be exploited. And my words got twisted by an ABC News subsidiary, Fusion, because I was interviewed by one of their reporters. I don't think this guy could be that ignorant or that stupid or that foolish. There was an agenda in play. Because what I had said when I was interviewed by Stuart Varney when I participated in the D.C. March for Jobs, in Washington, the D.C. March for Jobs, which was sponsored in part by Progressives for Immigration Reform. I was interviewed, this was July 15th of last year, 2013. I went into the Fox studios in Washington, and we did a satellite hookup with Stuart Varney, who was in New York. And I said, look, Stuart, here's the deal that most people don't understand. Back in 1986, when we gave lawful status to what was supposed to be a million or a little more aliens, and we wound up with almost 4 million, and by the way, should that happen with Obama's program, do the math. You could be looking at 15 to 20 million illegal aliens. I kid you not. I kid you not. But I said what most people don't realize is that right after these folks got legalized and they got that magic card in their hand and they went to their employer and said, hey, Charlie, I don't really like you, but you know what? I'll keep working for you because I like the people I work with. The factory's 4 blocks from my house. I know what's expected of me, but I'm not working for $5 an hour anymore. This was back in 86. I want prevailing wage. I want to be paid on the books. And by the way, there's no access to that fire escape in the back of the factory. I'm worried that if there's a fire, I have no way out. And you got to air condition the place. It's 110 degrees on the factory floor. That's illegal. There are certain conditions you have to meet. I don't want more than I'm entitled to, but I don't want less either, because now I'm here legally, and I should be treated better. And they're right, they should be. But what happened was many of these unscrupulous bosses simply fired these people. They didn't keep their jobs once they said, hey, you can't exploit me anymore. These bums who had exploited them, who treated them worse than garbage, worse than slaves, fired them, said, beat it. Now, they didn't go without workers. They just hired the next wave of illegal aliens. But this dim bulb reporter, or whatever you want to call them, contacts me, and I explain that. And he says, so, you're against any kind of legalization program because it would stop people from being exploited. I said, no, that's not what I'm saying. I don't ever want to see anybody exploited. It boils my blood. When I used to raid the factories and saw how people were mistreated, I would be in a state of white rage. I was glowing in the dark. But I said, understand something. If you legalize people and they demand proper wages because they are no longer exploitable, when they get fired, they will go on welfare and unemployment and food stamps, and they will become direct competitors with Americans and lawful immigrants for the better-paying jobs. And meanwhile, the employers will continue to hire illegal aliens. That's not going to stop, because all they're offering to do is kind of sort of a little bit close up the Mexican border. And, of course, we're being told now that the border is fine. And if you believe that, check out a film I'm very proud to be in that was done by the Tea Party Patriots called The Border States of America. The Border States of America. They borrowed my tagline, because the tagline for this film that's narrated by the actor Nick Searcy, the tagline, every state is now a border state. I was interviewed, but that's the least of it. They interviewed some truly amazing people, Senator Jeff Sessions, Congressman Louie Gohmert, Congressman Steve King. They interviewed ranchers all along that border from Texas to Arizona. They interviewed a couple of Border Patrol officials, and they interviewed a bunch of sheriffs. And when you see what passes for a border, you will freak out. In some places, a speed bump would be an improvement. So what we're looking at is a disastrous situation. The border has no security. And the accusations that are being thrown at us should be worn with pride, because we know that if they're making the accusations, we're getting to them. You know, when this yo-yo contacted me and said, oh, you're against comprehensive reform because it would end exploitation, I mean, you know where his head's at. You know what the agenda is. Some of my friends saw that broadcast, and they were very clear to them. They said, no, Mike, we understood what you were saying, because I called them up, and I said, you know, did I misspeak? I was so exhausted. I had just done a speaking engagement in Arizona, flew overnight to Washington, had about 3 hours sleep, and I was standing out there in a 105-degree sweltering sun. They said, wasn't I clear? And the folks who I spoke to said, sure you were clear. What you were complaining about is that if these people get legalized and they go and ask for proper wages and proper conditions, they're going to be fired. They're not going to be treated fairly. They're going to be unemployed. Hard concept, but this is how the other side operates. Just like when you say, let's secure the borders, let's enforce the laws. What's the accusation? You're anti-immigrant. You're a xenophobe. You're a nativist. I hear it all the time. But what I don't understand is why Americans aren't pushing back. When they say to me, you're a nativist and you're anti-immigrant, here's the answer, folks. File this one away. It's very important. First of all, never allow your enemies to define you. If you do that, you're done. You're finished. You've lost the argument. You've lost it all. We are pro-enforcement. And the same laws that tell us who to kick out and who to keep out for purposes of national security, public safety, public health, and a variety of economic and quality of life issues are the same laws that tell us who to admit. It's under the laws that I support and the laws that, in fact, for 30 years of my adult life I enforced and administered. It's under those laws that we admit more than a million lawful immigrants every year. More than a million. These folks are immediately placed on the pathway to U.S. citizenship, more than the rest of the immigrants that travel around the world combined. Under those laws, we naturalize well over a half million new citizens every year. Under those laws, we provide political asylum to aliens who articulate a credible fear. I wish there were a hell of a lot more integrity to that program. And under those laws, we admit foreign students and visitors, all sorts of categories of non-immigrants. How on earth can you be labeled anti-immigrant when you support the laws under which aliens legally immigrate? It's a contradiction in terms. But this is the nonsense that passes for discussions these days about immigration. So we had Chuck Schumer doing his thing, and I want you to now read this final little paragraph, because this really shows you how dangerous the Obama proposal is, and yet you're hearing nothing. Bupkis, Zipperuni from the Republicans. Because they are not on our side either, folks. I hate to tell you. I wish I could say that there's a political party that really represents us. I mean, if you look at the Tea Party, the way they're vilified, the Tea Party, at least my understanding of it, and I have many friends who are in the Tea Party, and they know I'm a Democrat. And by the way, I'm going to be speaking at their convention in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, for the fourth year in a row come January. And they know that I'm a registered Democrat, and they welcome me to come and share my perspectives. This is what Americans do. We openly debate the issues. That's why the First Amendment is the First Amendment. That's what every soldier who has given his or her life defending America has been defending. And yet, try to speak the truth and see how quickly you get vilified and sliced and diced, especially on college campuses today. Especially on college campuses. We're just 2 days away from December 7th, you know, the anniversary of Pearl Harbor. Think of the sacrifices of our military. What in the world did they sacrifice for if we are surrendering our expectations of privacy and the ability to have a civil debate? You cannot have a democratic process without debate and discourse. That's at the heart of America. You'd never know it today. You'd never know it today. And Boehner and company, it's time you stood with America and Americans, because you're not. Absolutely not. And here's my proof. Here's my proof. If you believe it makes sense to provide unknown millions of illegal aliens with lawful status and identity documents with the absurd argument that you can't deport them all, we only enforce any law slightly. Think of how many people speed on the highway that don't get stopped. How many people that fudge on their tax returns. Unless, of course, Miss Lerner, I guess, has you in her sights. That's another story for another day. But people get away with all kinds of nonsense. And it's not right. And as a law enforcement officer, it would rev my motor to see some of the abuses that went on that people got away with. But the nature of law enforcement is to try to provide a deterrent. Just like Chuck Schumer said, if only he would be willing to apply it to our borders and our immigration laws. So all these arguments are ridiculous, because this is the number one reason why it's ridiculous. This is on page 98 of the 9/11 Commission staff report on terrorist travel. Terrorists in the 1990s, as well as the September 11th hijackers, needed to find a way to stay in or embed themselves in the United States if their operational plans were to come to fruition. As already discussed, this could be accomplished legally by marrying an American citizen, achieving temporary worker status. Did you catch that? Achieving temporary worker status. This is exactly what Obama is now proposing. So I'm going to repeat it again. Terrorists in the 1990s, as well as the September 11th hijackers, needed to find a way to stay in or embed themselves in the United States if their operational plans were to come to fruition. As already discussed, this could be accomplished legally by marrying an American citizen, achieving temporary worker status, or applying for asylum after entering. Think of the Tsarnaev brothers, folks. In many cases, the act of filing for an immigration benefit sufficed to permit the alien to remain in the country until the petition was adjudicated. Terrorists were free to conduct surveillance, coordinate operations, obtain and receive funding, go to school and learn English, make contacts in the United States, acquire necessary materials, and execute an attack. You heard what I just read, you've heard what Obama has said, and you've heard the Republican response. Name one Republican out there who's taken to the microphones who has said clearly and unequivocally what the president is proposing violates the findings and recommendations of the 9/11 Commission, would undermine national security, would be destructive to the middle class of America, and would greatly increase the amount of money being wired out of the United States by the newly legalized aliens. Are you even hearing that from anybody? I'm sure Jeff Sessions agrees with me, and when I was in Florida with him, he was very clear. I mean, this guy stands shoulder to shoulder with the average American family. I wish he was the next president. Seriously. But where's John Boehner? Where are any of these supposed Republican leaders? You're opposed to Obama? Why? Why? So you can get a headline? So you can thump the Constitution and say, oh, he's violating the Constitution? Well, what about Article 4 of the Constitution that talks about, you know, preventing invasion? We know that the terrorists want to come here. If they succeed, that's how they are landing behind the enemy lines. You know, in World War II, the spies and the saboteurs did all kinds of crazy things. You go to the FBI website, they got a story about how some German Nazi saboteurs got on a U-boat and tried to get into the United States through Long Island and through Florida, entering surreptitiously. Fortunately, they were caught by the Coast Guard and the FBI, and they were prevented from carrying out acts of sabotage. But as the 9/11 Commission staff report starts out saying, before they can attack us, they got to get here. and yet you got Chuck Schumer screaming about people trespassing on the Brooklyn Bridge, trespassing on the Trade Center, saying they should be in jail for 5 years, but when you trespass on America, you've earned the right to U.S. citizenship. You know, I went through the DHS budget, the money that's allocated to the Department of Homeland Surrender. The amount of money is staggering. It's something on the order of $59 billion a year. I mean, it's just mind-boggling, $59 billion. But you know what? $3.3 billion is allocated to the inspections process conducted at ports of entry by CBP, Customs and Border Protection. $3.3 billion. And something dawned on me, and I want you to follow along with me. We're spending $3.3 billion. We have more than 20,000 full-time employees in the jargon of the government, FTEs, full-time employees, working to conduct those inspections of cargo and people coming across the border. It's a lot of money, you know, and it also pays for running the facilities, the inspection facilities, and the computer systems and so forth, all covered by a little over $3.3 billion. Why are we bothering? Why in the world are we bothering to spend that $3.3 billion on inspectors at ports of entry and other related expenses when it makes no difference how you get here? You have Chuck Schumer, you've got Obama, you've got Boehner, you've got all these people talking about, oh, they're here. Well, we can't turn them away. And as long as they're here, let's give them legal status. So what's the big debate? Should they be given citizenship or just lawful status so they can work and send lots of money home? That's the debate? Really? Obama said, we're going to put them on the back of the line. Back of the line for what? Ice cream sundaes? Back of what line where for what? Back of the line for citizenship? They don't want to be citizens. They want to send money home. They want to work. And that would happen immediately. That's the line they want to be on. And they're there. And the people waiting for their visas to be approved are still sitting in their home countries with a thumb in their nose or someplace else. Back of the line. Boy, that's a great phrase. I saw it on Hannity, same thing. Oh, we're going to put these people on the back of the line. Everybody was cheering. You would have thought they just served them red meat. I mean, this is astonishing. And we're hearing from reporters in the Wall Street Journal and economists, maybe a friend of Gruber, you know, the G Factor Gruber. That's what I'm going to call him from now on, the G Factor. Oh, you know, there's no problem on the border, folks. Nothing to see here. Really go to the border. But that's what we're hearing from the Wall Street Journal. That's the editorial policy. Bring them on. It's like, you know, the price is right. Come on down. And then we're hearing from these economists, so-called, the bean counters, the Alan Greenspans of the world, the Grubers of the world. Oh, if we brought in thousands upon thousands of brilliant people from around the world, they just can't wait to hire Americans. You believe that story? I got a fence to sell you. This is about undermining America's middle class. And then yesterday, I was asked to be on the television program, Newsmax TV, and I am frequently a guest on Newsmax. J.D. Hayworth is a former member of Congress. He's now a talk show host. And so they asked me to be on the program to discuss the fact that four citizens of Turkey believed to be, or in fact they had solid information according to published reports, that they had been involved with terrorist organizations. And incredibly, two were retained in custody and two were cut loose by an immigration judge who were trying to run the border. So the question becomes, how in the world did the judge let them go? Why didn't the administration do anything about it? And we subsequently find out that these two individuals reportedly involved with terrorist organizations, were able to get on board airplanes and fly to Canada, whereupon they applied for political asylum. No word yet on whether or not Canada will grant them political asylum. But here's the issue. If they're known terrorists, this, that was what the story was, why were they allowed to get on board an airplane? Wouldn't that give you the warm fuzzies knowing that the guy that sat next to you in seat, you know, 10B or whatever, is a terrorist? Meanwhile, we're all but given a proctologist's exam getting on board an airplane. But don't worry, because we're going to let these folks get on the plane. And then we have the Trusted Traveler program, and that reminds me of the old Johnny Carson program, those of you old enough to remember it. Who do you trust? I mean, the whole thing is a charade. And we are spending more money on TSA than ICE, than Immigration and Customs Enforcement. To what purpose? To what point? If I can get the words out, I'm so angry. So think about it. The judge says, you can go, and they hop on an airplane and wing their way to Canada, where they are right now. And by the way, if they're that determined to come to the United States, because that would seem to be why they came across the Mexican border in the first place, who's to say that now that they're up in Canada, they're not going to hop over the border that separates the United States from Canada and disappear somewhere inside the United States? I mean, think of the lunacy. Think of the lunacy. But the NSA justifies their actions because we're in the middle of a war on terror. Claire McCaskill, the senator, screamed and ranted and raved along with a whole bunch of other people, including Obama, over how Snowden could have been given a security clearance, how the guy that shot up the Navy Yard in Washington a year ago could have gotten security clearances. And you know what? Those are fair questions. You may disagree with me, and that's cool. We're Americans. We're entitled to disagree. Disagreement is encouraged on this program, folks. Disagreement is encouraged. But what Snowden did, in my judgment, was treasonous. What the NSA did was reprehensible. Two wrongs don't make a right. Snowden went to Russia with a bunch of classified material, apparently, and compromised our safety. There's a way of doing things and a way of not doing things. That's not the way to do things. So everyone said, oh, how did they give him a clearance? How did they give the Navy Yard shooter a clearance? This is dangerous. When we give people the clearance, it better be, you know, okay, fine. I agree. I absolutely agree. I went through that process. I had a top secret clearance as an agent. And every 5 years, my goodness gracious, you have no idea how thorough that background investigation, not a background check. I love the nomenclature. Background check, you know, this is silly. If you're talking about a background check, what you're really doing is comparing apples with cannonballs. You know, did you ever go to the mall and they have a blood pressure cuff and for a dollar or whatever you shove your arm in the thing and they tell you your blood pressure? Is that the same thing as an annual physical? I mean, the silliness of it all, that people actually believe that what they're talking about with this background check nonsense is going to be significant or foolproof or safe. You know, the only thing worse than no security is false security. This is false security. So they're screaming, how in the world? How in the world did they give these two guys a background clearance and Snowden does what he does and the shooter runs around the Navy Yard and kills a bunch of people? How do they give him a security clearance? And they turn around in the next breath and what do they say? Oh, but it's okay to give millions of illegal aliens who snuck into the United States identity documents and lawful status without even a face-to-face interview. Forget about a field investigation. What could possibly go wrong? Really? Are we that stupid? I mean, maybe they're expecting the G factor to kick in or something, but this is an outrage. You're rewarding criminal behavior, and you're doing it so ineptly and incompetently that you will be providing opportunities for terrorists and fugitives and transnational criminals to enter the United States and ply their trades here. Their trades deal with our death. This is insanity. But yet not a word from John Boehner. Not a word. Doesn't say, well, what the president wants to do has to be stopped because this would undermine national security. Not a word. It's only because he's violating the Constitution. This isn't the way the process is conducted. See, if he did it in the way it's supposed to be done, then we're cool with giving millions of people identity documents without an interview. I have never in my life gotten to the point where I would expect to hear a supposed member of Congress, let alone the Speaker of the House, be this idiotic. It's idiotic. I don't know any polite language that I can use. It boils my blood. I lived through 9/11. My neighbors were slaughtered. I did my first hearing 4.5 years before 9/11, and that hearing focused on visa fraud and immigration fraud because of the 293 attacks. In January of 93, a Pakistani by the name of Mir Amil Kansi shot up the CIA. He had applied for political asylum and repaid our kindness and generosity by killing two CIA officers and wounding three others. And a month later, we had the first attack at the Trade Center. Six dead, over 1,000 injured, $500 million in damages inflicted on what had been the centerpiece of the Lower Manhattan skyline, the World Trade Center complex. Unbelievable. And what did we learn from that? Nothing. We had the hearings, and the Clinton administration did nothing, absolutely nothing. And what was the result? 9/11. 3,000 dead. The damage done to the economy and the world and everything else still reverberates. But the biggest hit, the biggest damage were those lives. And how many people have since died, especially first responders who were exposed to those terrible toxins and not only have died, but died painfully, died suffering of cancers and all kinds of terrible illnesses. So the casualty count isn't done running yet. It's not done yet. And yet, that's not enough to get us to get the point. December 7th, 1941, 3,000 people were killed at Pearl Harbor. On 9/11, 3,000 people were killed. And Pearl Harbor, in some ways, wasn't as bad as what happened on 9/11, because Pearl Harbor was a U.S. possession at the time. On 9/11, we were killed in the heart of our financial district, and our Pentagon was struck outside Washington, D.C., our nation's capital. They were here. And then afterwards, we heard all these little slogans, all these idiotic statements. We're fighting them over there, so we don't have to fight them over here. Well, where the hell do you think those attacks took place? All these slogans that nobody even thinks about what they're hearing. You know, we've had instances of terrorists being captured here, coming across the border. We've had members of Congress talking about it. But the leadership of both parties is so greedy, so intent on getting the campaign contributions from the United States Chamber of Commerce. It's the Chamber of Commerce in Washington that has pushed the issue to expand the visa waiver program. There were 26 visa waiver countries on 9/11. Now we have 38. Chile became number 38 March of this year. The 9/11 Commission, as you heard, warned about the way we gave out visas. Doesn't matter. For enough money, we have people flying blind. They don't care. Promise me the votes and promise me the contributions, and I'll do what you want. Look at the economy. Look at what is going on with that economy. And all the allegations of bigotry, if you dare say, let's enforce the laws. As bad as the economy is, with the tens of millions of unemployed and underemployed Americans, the numbers are far worse for America's black community, America's Latino community. But then we hear about the Latino vote, which is the most insidious form of profiling I could imagine. If I know your last name and it's Garcia or Rodriguez, I don't need to know anything more about you. The Jewish vote is no better. The black vote is no better. They're shoving us into little cubby holes, and we're supposed to accept this garbage. We're supposed to accept being categorized that way, and it's all a lie. It's a fantasy. When they did a survey, voters in this last election who identified themselves as being Latino, only about 16%, if I remember the statistic correctly, said that immigration was a significant issue. The biggest issue, by far, was the economy. The economy. Between legal and illegal immigration, without a doubt, this country is gaining more foreign workers each and every month than the number of new jobs that are being created. In fact, in some months, most months, the number of legal potential workers exceeds the number of jobs created without even looking at the illegals. How is this going to end well for America or Americans? And what's happening is the destruction of the middle class. What's happening is there are casinos in Atlantic City going bankrupt. Donald Trump's casino in Atlantic City has gone belly up. And the people that took it over have to divest themselves because they can't make a go of it either. Well, guess why? We are destroying the salaries, the incomes, the disposable income, if you will, of middle-class families. So the people that might run down to Atlantic City for 2 or 3 days to unwind and blow off steam aren't doing it because they can't afford to do it. So Atlantic City casinos go broke, and they have to lay people off. So they then go from being tax-paying middle-class consumers to unemployed on various subsidy programs. How does that help the American economy? And where's John Boehner in all this, or John Boner, as I prefer calling him? Doesn't say a word. All we hear when we turn on the news is, boy, comprehensive reform, that's going to fire up the economy. Does anybody bother asking them how? I was on Neil Cavuto the day after Thanksgiving, a week ago today. Charles Payne was sitting in for Neil. And the discussion that we had focused on how there's actually an incentive for employers to hire the newly legalized aliens that will be cranked out by this program that Obama is going to do, if we don't stop them, if Congress doesn't stop them. How is the incentive happening? Well, at least in theory, and in many states this is not the case, by the way, but in theory, aliens who are in this program that Obama wants to create are not covered by Obamacare. Now, I don't know if you folks are aware of it or not, but a company that refuses to give an employee health insurance has the alternative of simply paying a $3,000 fine per person that they're not covering. So if, let's say, a company has 100 employees, that's $300,000 if they refuse to give their employees health insurance. Unless the employees are these people in this cockamamie legalization program, temporary program. I don't know what in the world they're going to call this. Dreamers on steroids. So guess what we're going to have happen? Suddenly employers are going to say, well, you know what? If I hire people who just got legal status, I don't have to pay that $3,000 per head tax on them because I'm not going to give them health insurance. And I still don't have to pay the penalty because then they don't need to. I can't give them that insurance anyway. So we're good to go. Now, there's another little quirky thing about our immigration laws that you may not know. If an employer hires an illegal alien, they could be fined for it. They could actually be prosecuted. I've done expert witness testimony in a case like that. However, if you ask too many questions, you know, let's say you hire an employee and the guy says to you, oh, I'm a citizen of Canada, or pick some other country. I don't care what country you want to pick. And the employer says, well, that's fine. Do you have a green card? And the guy says, well, I do. I don't have it with me. I can write the number down. I have it memorized. But here's my Social Security card and here's my driver's license. You cannot ask to see the green card. Now, you can sign up for E-Verify, but it's not mandatory. So you can ask to see the green card and get into trouble because that's called document abuse. Because according to the law, you have to make a good faith effort to reasonably determine that the document you're looking at is authentic. Are you a question document examiner? Really? Lots of luck. So you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. If you make it a pattern to only hire American citizens, you could be looking at a lawsuit. Oh, you're discriminating against people who have a foreign accent. Guess what you can do as a pattern with no consequences? You can hire people who are legalized, people who are not citizens, and you can make sure that none of your employees are citizens. And the law says that's cool. That's cool because you're not discriminating against people who aren't citizens, and that's all that the law worries about. So think of what the incentive is here, folks, that the law is creating, that Obamacare exacerbates, and the harm that this does to American families and American workers. This is crazy. This is absolute sheer flipping madness. And when you try to explain this to some people, they find it hard to believe. But this is where we are today. This is the problem that we're confronting. We are confronting an administration that's out of control, that's trampling and shredding the Constitution. You have Republicans who, rather than standing up and taking the moral high ground and saying, yes, you're shredding the Constitution, but you're also undermining national security, you're undermining public safety, and you're snatching the American dream away from Americans and their children, that's not happening. The sole focus of John Boehner and company, sole focus, is whether or not this is about the Constitution. I'm very worried about the precedent being set by Obama. This business about the Constitution is critical. Without the Constitution, we're like every other wackaloon country out there. It's our Constitution that keeps us on the straight and narrow. This abject disregard, this disdain, this abhorrence of the Constitution and process, very disturbing, especially coming from a man who purportedly was a constitutional law instructor. But why in the world aren't the Republicans screaming about national security? Everyone said, the Republicans, they're the ones that are tough on security. Really? When you can hear the leadership of the Republican Party talk about how it's reasonable to give lawful status and identity documents to people who snuck into the country, and you won't even have the opportunity to interview them or conduct a field investigation, even if you believe this is a good program, and I think it's a horrific program, but there's no way it can be executed without endangering American lives and national security. No way. Not possible. So this Republican Party that's supposed to be so tough on national security, they're the daddy party as compared with the Democrats who are the mommy party. We've heard all these crazy things, and I know some women are probably going to want to throw something at me for being sexist, and I don't mean to be sexist in saying it. I'm just describing how it's always been portrayed. The Republicans are the tough guys. We're tough on the military. We're tough on law enforcement. Rule of law. Rule of law. There's the phrase, rule of law. Well, we have the laws, folks. They're not being enforced. We're being told the immigration system is broken. Okay, let's play this game. The immigration system is broken. How do we know? I'll tell you how we know. We have, and I don't buy this 11 million figure, I'm going to guess we have 30 to 40 million illegal aliens in the United States. In fact, the Obama administration recently said that they were going to order up 34 million new green cards. And when they asked, and I love the press secretary's last name, Ernest, holy smoke, it's like a cartoon character. Mr. Ernest stood there and said, we're not going to discuss procurement of office supplies. Green cards or office supplies? You would think we were talking about paper clips, rubber bands, and pencils, for God's sakes. So we're talking about 34 million aliens are going to be processed. Obviously, there's a problem because illegal aliens are coming to the United States. They are not being deterred from coming here, and they're not being deterred from remaining illegally when they come here through the front door, so to speak, violating their immigration status. And I've done hearings about this, and it's believed that perhaps as much as 40% of the illegal aliens didn't run the Mexican border. So why are we so focused just on the Mexican border? It's a charade. Rule of law? Really? And then you look at the Boston Marathon bombing, and it's apparent that the Tsarnaev family committed fraud. Why do I say that? Because they came here with visas. When they overstayed, they then claimed credible fear. We can't go back to Russia. If we go back to Russia, we're going to face persecution or worse. Fair enough. So we gave them asylum in the United States. We gave them lawful status. One of the brothers gets a green card, the other one gets a green card and goes on to become a U.S. citizen. But what did they not look at? The fact that as soon as they got their lawful status, they hopped on airplanes voluntarily, and where did they go? Back to the country they claimed they could never go back to, Russia. You think maybe there's a little alarm bell clanging saying, hey, they lied, they committed fraud. Maybe. Maybe there are just so many people doing it they didn't pay attention. And the GAO, the General Accountability Office, has said that I think it's a 70% fraud rate in the political asylum program. And by the way, if you remember, 9/11 Commission staff report warned political asylum fraud, a key method of entry and embedding for terrorists. But we can ignore that. So let's say they fell through a big crack in the system. A couple of months ago, the sister of the Tsarnaev brothers who attacked the Boston Marathon April 15th last year, the sister gets arrested. Not by immigration, but by the local police. You know why she was arrested, folks? Because she threatened to blow up her ex-boyfriend. I see an explosive pattern here, but what do I know? So she gets picked up by the cops for threatening her former boyfriend. Here's the question. Why wasn't she picked up as soon as the Tsarnaev brothers were grabbed? One was killed, one is in custody. It was pretty obvious by everything that we had learned in the publicly available documentation, open source material, as I used to say back on the job when I was there. What did we see? That they apparently defrauded the immigration system, the political asylum program. As I told Louis Gohmert in Florida and John Fleming and some other members of Congress, I coined an expression, and my friend Lou Barletta, when I spoke with him last week, thought it was very funny. I said, you know, you've heard of low-hanging fruit? Their sister was fruit in the basket. There was no work to be done. They went back to Russia. You know they went back to Russia. After they claimed credible fear, they apparently lied. Why was she still floating around out there for more than a year? Is the system broken? Yes. So we're told how broken the system is. And we know that the House Judiciary Committee had a hearing a year ago this month. And what was the hearing about? The hearing was about how members of the Mexican drug cartels had been granted political asylum in the United States. Okay, so we know that the process by which applications for these benefits are adjudicated has no integrity. The subcommittee, or actually the full committee, the full Judiciary Committee, made that abundantly clear. They had the hearing, and what did they say? There's no integrity to the process. And what's the solution to fixing this broken system? Have that broken bureaucracy that has been granting political asylum to members of the Mexican cartel, have them process 5 million, 10 million, God knows how many millions of applications where there's a significant national security risk involved. Does that sound like a way of fixing a dangerous situation? That's like saying the brakes on the car you're driving aren't working. Hit the gas pedal, go faster. It does not compute. It's beyond belief. They're told the system isn't working. We have no integrity to this process that the 9/11 Commission identified as posing a threat to national security. So what's the solution? Dump more papers on the desks of the bureaucrats who can't handle their workload now. And I don't blame them. They're begging everybody to stop this train because they know that what Obama wants to do would be catastrophic. You would think that the Republicans would ride in on their white horse and say, stop everything. You can't do this. You're threatening national security. You would think. They'd probably win every seat in the House in the next election. But no, they can't help themselves because that's not what they're talking about. That's not what they're saying. This party that wants to portray itself as the rule of law party, maybe not so much. Maybe not so much. Maybe it's the rule of the vote and the rule of the campaign contribution. That's the rule they're following. The rule that everyone's got their price, I guess. Because it is so abundantly clear. This isn't controversial. This isn't black helicopters, you know, and UFOs. This isn't Area 51. Read the 9/11 Commission report. How much more clearly could they spell it out? How much more clearly? And yet the leadership of the Republican Party doesn't hold a news conference? I mean, I have a visual in mind. Picture this. Imagine the Republicans standing on the steps of the Capitol for a photo op. and every member of the Republican Party, and I bet you get Democrats that would go along with it, because I didn't think that political affiliation constituted a suicide pact. Imagine if they all stood there holding a single book in their hands, the 9/11 Commission report, and for good measure, the 9/11 Commission staff report on terrorist travel. Imagine standing there and saying to the president, you're going to take this country and drive it off the cliff. We are at war with terrorists. Maybe he didn't want to use the word terrorist in Benghazi, but it's pretty clear what happened. And Republicans would do a great thing, not for themselves, but for America and Americans. And look at the way the Democrats are trying to run away from Mr. Obama now. They know that his policies are toxic and disastrous. They know. In fact, when I was on with Charles Payne on Neil Cavuto's program last week, I had a laugh at how earlier that day there were news reports of Chuck Schumer backing away from Obamacare. And I jokingly said that if backpedaling was an athletic sport, that Schumer would qualify for a gold medal. How many Democrats do you think would join hands with their Republicans? They'd reach across the aisle and stand there holding up the 9/11 Commission report and saying, you can't do this. You can't do this. Whether you think it's a good idea or not, and I can't think of a good reason why we should do it or why anyone could think it's a good idea. Because I have compassion. I do, folks. I have compassion first and foremost for my fellow Americans. I don't care if you're black, white, purple, if you have green polka dots. As Americans, we're in this together. E pluribus unum. But that's not what we're getting out of either party. We're not getting leadership. We're not getting morality. We're getting a bunch of lies. And that's why I will repeat what I said earlier. The next time there's an election, when the pollsters come out with their clipboards in hand, instead of asking people who they voted for, they need to ask them who they voted against. Who did you vote against? I have never seen a bigger bunch of clowns in need of big rubber noses and floppy shoes. It is so clear that this program that Obama is about to create will undermine national security, and the reverberations will be felt for many years to come. Many years to come. And I want to know, I really want to know, if God forbid, I so much want to be wrong, but if there's another massive terrorist attack and there's carnage, I want to know how the politicians who did not invoke the issue of the threat to national security will explain away the fact that they didn't say what needed to be said, they didn't take the actions that needed to be taken, because I still cannot forget that parade of these alleged leaders in Washington parading up to that microphone, cameras running, and saying, no one connected the dots. No one connected the dots. Well, we've been connecting the dots. We are witnessing the dismantling of the middle class. We are witnessing our economy not doing what it's supposed to be doing. And I don't care what Wall Street is doing. I care about what Main Street is doing. I care about how the average American is doing. And the answer is not well. Not well. And it's great to be theoretical and say, well, the Constitution, and it goes beyond theoretics. Let's be honest, this is significant. But I believe, I would submit to you folks, that it is no less significant. No less significant, not even by a little bit, that what this program would do, that the president wants to implement, would undermine national security and public safety and destroy the middle class. But not a word, not a peep, not a whimper, not a whisper, not a wink. Don't dare say that, because the American people will figure out what we're really doing to them. The G factor, folks. It's all about Gruber's perspective that the American people are a bunch of idiots. The time has come for us to prove to these elected representatives that we really aren't as stupid as Gruber and company think we are. If you're a parent, you cannot be a good parent if you're not involved in politics. Because what we're looking at today is the future of America, the future of our children, and the future of their children. All I have to ask you is, are you willing to step up to the plate, make that phone call, write that letter, arrange a meeting with your elected representative, because they will not be in session pretty soon. They're going to be coming home. And unlike what you're going to hear in the news, I'm going to tell you a secret. When members of Congress are home and not on vacation, they're supposed to be meeting with their constituents. I urge you to meet with the people who are paid to represent you and your family, and in fact, all Americans in Washington. This is the work Americans must do. This is the work you must do. Please, folks, get involved. Get involved. The clock is ticking. If the president pulls this one off, I don't know how in the world we will ever climb out of the hole that he is digging for all of us. It needs to be nipped in the bud. And final thought. Sometimes when I go out there and I talk to students or I talk to civics groups, and by the way, if you want me to come to your neck of the woods and do a speaking engagement, you can reach me through michaelcutler.net. You can reach me through capsweb.org. They certainly know how to get a hold of me. But people say to me, well, I'm just one person. I'm just one person. So I want you to consider something. When you think about the founding of this great nation, only a relative handful of names come to mind. How many hundreds of thousands of people participated in the Revolutionary War? How many? But yet, we just think of a handful of names. Same thing with the Second World War, the same thing with great discoveries. History, folks, I would remind you, is written by a handful of people who at that moment in history do what's necessary. That's why they erect those statues in the parks. People on horseback, people who made a difference. People who made a difference. It's time that we, the people, made a difference. It's not about being a Democrat. It's not about being a Republican. Let's be Americans for a change. Let's stand shoulder to shoulder. Let's put aside those relatively minor differences. And I know that there's so much emotion invested in some of those differences. But all of the arguments and all of the issues that we feel so passionately about, God forbid, could become little more than moot points if we lose our country, if we lose our future as Americans. Because it's America that keeps the free world intact. We are a major player on the world stage, even if this administration would rather see that role diminished for reasons I don't even want to speculate about. When we're on airplanes, they always tell you that if there's an emergency and the oxygen mask comes down, put yours on first before you try to help somebody else, because otherwise you're going to be just another useless casualty on that airplane. America needs the oxygen today, folks, and only we, the people, can make sure it gets it. Democracy, most certainly, is not a spectator sport. I thank you so much for joining me this evening, again, December 5th, 2014. Look forward to meeting with you again next week at the same time on the Michael Cutler Hour. Meanwhile, I wish all of you a wonderful weekend. Take care, everybody, and please get involved. As I said before, democracy is not a spectator sport. Good night, everybody.